This morning's Hebrew reading comes from the book of Psalm, chapter 31, verses 9 through 16. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am in distress. My eye wastes away from grief, my soul and body also. For my life is spent with sorrow and my years with sighing. My strength fails because of my misery, and my bones waste away. I am the scorn of all my adversaries, a horror to my neighbors, an object of dread to my acquaintances. Those who see me in the street flee from me. I have passed out of mind like one who is dead. I have become like a broken vessel. For I hear the whispering of many, terror all around, as they scheme together against me, as they plot to take my life. But I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hand. Deliver me from the hand of all that would cause me harm. Let your face shine upon me. Save me in your steadfast love. Amen.
Our gospel reading this morning comes from the book of Mark, chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. Jesus and his disciples came to the other side of the lake, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when he had stepped out of the boat, immediately a man out of the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. He lived among the tombs, and no one could restrain him anymore, even with a chain. For he had often been restrained with shackles and chains. But the chains he wrenched apart, and the shackles he broke in pieces, and no one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and bowed down before him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you, by God, do not torment me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged Jesus earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now there on the hillside, a great herd of swine was feeding, and the unclean spirits begged him, "Send us into the swine. Let us enter them." So Jesus gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the swine, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned in the water. The swineherds ran off and told it in the city and in the country. And then people came to see what it was that had happened. They came to Jesus and saw the demoniac sitting there, the man who had had the demon, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen what had happened to him and to the swine reported it. And then they began to beg Jesus to leave their neighborhood. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed by demons begged him that he might go with him. But Jesus refused and said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy he has shown you." And the man went away and began to preach and proclaim in the Decapolis just how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed. Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and our mouths and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. I'd like to invite forward Janet Forte for our sermon, our conversational sermon on mental health and self-care and participatory hope. We're going to need the cold water today. All right. Janet, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation and for sharing your story and for being willing to talk about something that often we don't talk about or we don't talk about enough. And we'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to say just a brief heads up about content. We're going to talk a little bit about suicide, mm-hmm. And that's part of things we need to talk about more. But just take care of yourselves, whether you've got, we have some coloring in the narthex for the kids if they want to step out for a little bit, but they may want to stay. Kids are affected by suicide and mental health as well. And for those who are online or here, if you need to step out for a minute or do whatever else, just take care of yourselves. So,
yeah,
well, thank you for being here.
First, thank you for inviting me into this conversation.
Yeah.
That means a lot to me, yeah. As does this amazing church community.
Yeah. So let's jump right into it. Today is your mom's birthday, right?
Yeah, I wore blue today because it was my mom's favorite color.
Yeah. And so you, I just think it's the Holy Spirit's in that, I think, that today is Janet's mom's birthday because your mom died by suicide when you were 12, 13?
The week of my 13th birthday.
Yeah.
Five days after my birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine that was particularly hard just as you were kind of coming into adolescence and
yes.
looking ahead to high school, and to lose a parent at any age is hard, but particularly as
yeah.
a teenager.
Like yeah. managing a changing body as a, you know, any kid going through that period of time, I just couldn't figure out what was going on with my body, and I felt like I really needed my mom
yeah.
to guide me through that. But she couldn't because she was really managing a lot of her own struggles. She lived with a significant mental health condition at the time. In the 70s, it was known as manic depression. We would now call it bipolar.
Yeah.
But really affected by a deep, deep depression.
Yeah. And you had shared with me there were times, there were great times and fun times with your mom, and there was a lot of struggle because as a kid, you expect to sort of have your parent be kind of the rock and be sort of stable. And when your parent's dealing with a mental health issue, that's not always the case. And especially back then when we didn't understand as much about it or
right.
how to treat it.
Yeah, I didn't understand really what was going on with her. And it felt, I felt so much embarrassment because my mom wasn't functioning like other people's parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's part of, again, we'll talk about this in a minute, but that shame of like, my family's
yeah.
different or I don't know, I don't feel normal either because we're dealing with our own mental health issue or because somebody we love is,
yeah.
right? That our story doesn't match other people's
no,
stories.
No, it really didn't, certainly not in Cheshire, Connecticut. It didn't match anyone else's story that I knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And in fact, may have matched someone's, but that people were so quiet about it, and still we often are so quiet about it, that we may not know when that's
right.
affecting a family or a person.
Yeah.
yeah. So you had shared that on the day that your mom died, that one of the people who supported your family, your dad was a Congregationalist, UCC, mm-hmm. and your mom was Catholic.
Yep.
And one of the people who supported your family on the day that your mom died was your Catholic priest, whose father,
yes.
Hanley?
Father Hanley.
Father Hanley.
Yeah, who married my parents because my mother was in a Lithuanian Catholic parish in Waterbury, Connecticut, and the priest at her parish wouldn't marry my parents because my father wasn't Catholic.
And he also wasn't Lithuanian. Right?
And he certainly wasn't Lithuanian. And but ironically, Father Hanley was in the next town over where my parents were planning to move. And Father Hanley married my parents.
Yeah. So you had that connection.
Yeah.
What was the first thing you said to him when you met with him the day that your mom
yeah,
died?
Yeah, so the day my mom died, my brother came to get me at a friend's house, and then instead of going into my house, I went across the street to my neighbors, who, by the way, happened to be Jewish. And then Father Hanley shows up at my neighbor's house, which, to begin with, I thought, this is weird. Like, I'm at my neighbors who are Jewish, and here's my priest showing up. But I mean, I was in shock. And the first thing I said to Father Hanley is, my mom's going to hell. Because in my Catholic tradition, that's what we were taught, that people that took their own life would be punished for doing that. So that was the first thing I said to Father Hanley. And Father Hanley was this incredibly kind, gentle priest, and he just said, no, no, no. God knows your mom wasn't well, and God isn't going to do that to your mom.
Yeah. I have to say, when you told me this story, my immediate reaction as a pastor was like, A-plus, A-plus theology and pastoral care.
As an adult, I now reflect up and say, good answer, Father Hanley.
Some questions don't have a right answer. That one has a right answer, and he gave it.
Yeah, he did.
Did that, maybe not at that moment because you were in shock, but has that kind of shaped the way that you thought about your mom's illness and her death and kind of, as an adult, your theology around that?
Well, gosh, I mean, as a person who now practices or engages in being in a congregational community, and of course, I think part of what brought me to this church was my father's traditions, but I think there were things about the theology that I was brought up in that as I grew older, I had questions about, like, didn't sit right with me. Like the fact that somebody who was in so much pain and chose to take their life, or who even knows if my mother chose to take her life? She was just trying to probably ease her pain because she couldn't live anymore like that. And why should she be punished?
Yeah. So that sort of opened up a whole set of like questioning the beliefs that maybe you had been taught
And
we'll talk more about that in a moment.
Okay.
We got
of course.
A good story there too. So talking about the stigma of living with mental health, whether it's yourself or a loved one, the story we read today from the gospel, oh my gosh, that was a little hard to read out loud, actually. I'd read it, of course, beforehand, but the way this young person was treated, actually, we don't know if he's young, but the way this man was treated.
The chains and the shackles,
Which if you or a loved one has ever been restrained or hospitalized with a psychiatric condition, or that can be very traumatic. And then the way that even after he's healed, people are sort of afraid. They want to send Jesus away. They don't know what to do with this man. That stigma is real. And even as we were talking in preparation for this conversational sermon, I said, how do we talk about this in a way that's appropriate for kids? Because we're not going to have Sunday school today.
Yeah,
and
of course.
You appropriately pushed back a little bit and said, we want to talk about this sensitively, but
of course.
This affects everybody.
Yeah.
Mental health is everybody's business. And there are certainly children, as you were, who might lose a loved one to suicide or who might have that.
Or even have a loved one living with a mental health condition that impacts them, and yet they don't have kind of a connection with other people. It's so different than when, and trust me, living with a physical illness is also very traumatic, and yet I think people rally around folks and families that are living with physical health conditions very differently than how people rally around families. Well, first of all, I can't even think about what it's like for the individual who's going through a significant health condition. We talk about, you know, they don't bring you casseroles when somebody's being, you know, taken to the psychiatric facility or, you know.
Yeah, again, there's shame. There's a sense of like, oh, that person, I think because it involves actions and words, that's often how symptoms come out, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, oh, that person is choosing to act this way, even though we would maybe never say it that way, but maybe in the back of our minds, there's that sort of, this is something that you could control. And it's not oftentimes.
No.
There are paths
no.
to saying yes to treatment
right.
or not, but sometimes you're not even in a place where you can say yes to that.
Right.
So thank you for naming that the difference between how we respond to an illness that affects the body versus an illness that affects a specific part of the body, right?
Right.
Because it is, our minds are part of our bodies. I can imagine that it wasn't easy for the loved ones of this man who's dealing, I should have noted, but I think y'all have heard me say before, an unclean spirit, a demon in the Bible, that is how people understood mental health issues, right? So it must have been difficult for the loved ones of this man, but it sounds like there probably wasn't a way for them to be supported apart from just shunning this man. So we need to build different ways of responding to that, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of the work that you've been doing with NAMI and with Allies in Recovery. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Well, I think, I don't know if you were going to ask about this later, but I think it was, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago now, Leah, you did a sermon on participatory hope that really resonated with me about engaging. You know, we can all hope, like, the climate's going to get better, and that's sort of like a passive hope, but then if I am very thoughtful about how I recycle, or maybe, you know, our church, you know, installs solar panels or things like that, those are ways to participate in that hope journey, still knowing, as I believe one of our prayers today said, knowing that we can't fix it, but we can participate in that hope journey. And so I think, as many folks in this community know, that you know, I continue to be impacted by mental health challenges in families, family members and friends around me. And that brought me to really engaging in, first of all, trying to educate myself in a different way than probably when I was a kid. I just don't think there were those resources. So a good friend of mine introduced me to a friend of hers who's very engaged in NAMI, in our local affiliate, which is NAMI Cambridge Middlesex.
And can you say NAMI is national?
No, oh, sorry. NAMI is the National Alliance for Mental Illness.
Thank you.
I actually don't love the term mental illness, but that is, it's okay that we use that term, but I often try to think about mental health conditions instead. Mm. I just feel like it's a more respectful and gentler term. But anyways, NAMI is the National Alliance for Mental Illness, and it's an amazing organization that provides many things, including education, resources, and support for individuals living with mental health conditions and for friends and family members, for loved ones.
Yeah.
So, and then the other organization you mentioned is called Allies in Recovery, and I actually really love that name because it is about being an ally in somebody else's recovery, whether that be a recovery from substance use or recovery for living with a mental health condition. And by the way, those things go hand in hand. I mean, people living with substance use are just trying to get some relief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. If you, I know, I have been just so in awe of and admiring of your journey to kind of evolve or change your attitude or approach to helping to accompany somebody on a mental health journey, and how hard you have worked to figure out what is yours to take care of and what is the other person's or other other folks' things to take care of. If you were going to give some advice to someone in the congregation who is in a similar position, what are some of the things that you have learned that have been helpful to you?
Well, I do think that we all hear about the oxygen mask analogy over and over again, but I think it's really true. I think one of the things that's been most important for me is getting that oxygen mask on myself and really taking care of myself. And whether that's, you know, walking down the pike path, listening to my electronic dance music, or riding my bicycle like I did this morning, or attending a support group, or engaging in learning more about something, really, you know, taking a class or going attending you know, a seminar or something like that. So I think really taking care of oneself so that you are at your fullest capacity to be present for the other person, but also knowing that you can't fix it. So figuring out where the boundaries are for you. And I think that's really personal. And honestly, one of the things I've learned in the last, I don't know, year or two, is that boundaries are fluid. There may be a day when I feel very comfortable doing something for someone else, and there might be another day where I say, you know, I can't do that.
Yeah.
But this is what I can do.
Yeah.
This is what I can do.
We've talked a lot about how, whether it's with mental health, whether it's with being a caregiver for somebody who's aging in your life, whether it's a friendship that the other person kind of needs a lot, relatives, that setting boundaries really allows for us to keep our compassion and our empathy because we're not feeling so drained that we have nothing
right.
left to give. And
what's interesting, just a quick side note about boundaries, that recently I was in a support group, an Allies in Recovery support group, and we talked about how boundaries aren't about the other person. The boundaries are about me, about myself. So I, you know, setting a boundary is not about the other person or the other people in my life and controlling them. It's really what I'm doing for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
As I was rereading our scripture again today, I noticed that Jesus actually sets a boundary. We don't know why, but...
Yeah, I noticed that.
the man who had had the demon possession, who had had the mental health issue, says, I want to come with you. And Jesus says, thank you, but no, you have a different job to do. And Jesus is actually really good at setting boundaries. There are people who want things from him or try to force him into a corner or who say, you know, I want to come follow you, but they haven't dealt with whatever they might need to deal with first. And Jesus says, nope, we need to do these other things instead or first. And he also does something. What he says to the man is, what is your name?
Yeah.
He recognizes the humanity of this person who has been ostracized, who's living in the cemetery, which is like the most unclean of places, right? And who's been completely rejected from society. And he asks him his name. And then at the end, he makes him into a preacher. He says, go out and share this good news, which is why one of the things, again, that I admired about your journey is that you have been looking for ways to share what you've learned with the family support group that meets here on
right.
the fourth Tuesday
yes.
of each month.
Yes.
And to figure out, you know, how you can tell people things like we talked about validating somebody else's feelings.
So powerful.
Yeah.
Validation is so powerful.
Yeah. That even if you're thinking in your head, well, you're feeling this way because you're in the situation that you got yourself at, no, that you validate, tell you what, this works with seven-year-olds as well. Validating, it works with everybody.
Yeah.
Validating feelings because then we're seen as a human and that whatever we're going through is hard.
Yeah.
And the other thing that you had mentioned that I thought was so important was presence over agenda. Can you say a little bit about presence over agenda? Being with somebody
oh,
as
yeah.
opposed to...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, meeting people where they're at and doing that without my own agenda. And I think I've got another loved one that I'm thinking about as well. I think I can just say it's my brother. And I think after losing our mom, I had an agenda for years about how my brother should process that loss. Mm. And I think that, you know, on my part, really had a negative impact on my brother and I really being able to grow in our relationship. Often there was a lot of tension for people who've heard me talk about my wonderful brother. A lot of tension between us, and I think it was because I often approached him with this agenda about that, you know, he should be in therapy or he should be doing this or that. And truly, I think what has been most helpful in these past few years and all that I've learned and how I have grown myself is to just be present for where my brother's at and who he is and how he chooses to respond to circumstances in his life. And truly, he has had other difficult experiences in his life, and just be present for him.
Yeah. Again, I think that's a wise word that applies to so many relationships in our lives. I know I show up with an agenda to some relationships in my life, and it doesn't usually go well, I have to say. I wanted to touch on a couple more things briefly. One is I just want to tell the story. I'd love you to tell the story because I think it's just going to be a delight for the congregation. When you were in college and figuring out what you were going to study.
Yes.
You were studying psychology.
I was. And I double majored in psychology and mental health.
Yeah.
I just dove head first. That was it. I was going to save everybody from taking their life.
Yeah. And your advisor at one point sat you down and said... or maybe it was the person who was interviewing
part of my mental health major, I had to do a full year internship, and I was I was assigned to go do a full internship on a psychiatric unit, I believe at Lawrence Memorial Hospital. And I met with the social worker, who I assume was probably the floor supervisor. But I had just lost my dad to strokes. I was a senior in college. He died in my junior year. And I had had a few other circumstances that were happening at the same time that were also, I was just dealing with a lot at the same time. And she asked me if I'd been in therapy, and I said no. And she said, well, you are going to be facing patients on this floor. Jerry, so as people might know, my father was quite a bit older than my mom. So he was 75 when he died, but I was only 21. So she said, you're going to be working with geriatric patients, and you're going to be working with depressed patients, and I'm concerned that you haven't mourned your parents. And I got in my car in tears. I thought, great, now I'm losing my career too, because I had lost my dad and had another relationship loss at the same time. And I went to meet with my advisor, and he put me into a classroom with preschoolers with special needs in Harvard Square, and I thought I was being demoted, truly. I thought, what is this? Like, I want to work with adults and save people from mental illness. And I actually didn't like children very much, which is shocking.
For those of you who don't know, Janet not only had a decades-long career in preschool teaching children, yeah, but also is one of our wonderful Sunday school teachers. So.
Yeah. So, but about, I don't know, about 2 months into this internship, I absolutely fell in love with the work. And I fell in love with those children and that age group. And that's when I decided, oh no, I got to re-enroll in a different graduate program because I got to get my teaching certificate. What I really want to do now is be a teacher of young children with special needs. And during my career, I worked with kids both with and without special needs in inclusionary settings. But yeah, I mean, I don't even know who she was, but I always think about her because I feel like, talk about a change of trajectory.
Uh-huh.
For sure.
Surprise, yeah. There are other moments in your story that we talked about. You know, somebody who was going through a lot this week asked me, you know, is this part of a plan? Like, is this all the suffering happening to me for a reason? And what I think, as you know, as we're becoming theologians, right, as we're looking for God in our everyday lives and where God is involved in this, I think Father Hanley would join me in saying that no, aww, there was not, you know, some bigger plan or reason. You needed your mom. She,
yeah,
and other loved ones who are going through things.
Yeah.
If we could wave a magic wand and relieve that suffering, like we would. There's not anything inherently good about that. And yet, the Spirit has this way of taking really difficult circumstances that we're in and bringing surprising new life out of them, right?
Yeah.
But you ended up with this career that you loved, even
I
though
did.
At the moment it felt like everything was falling apart.
Right.
And just, you know, ways that your family supported each other or shifted after your mom's death. There's so many times when, or even if when you're struggling with a loved one's walk on a mental health journey, and then a good moment happens.
Right.
You have a connection. You have a, yeah, good day with them, or something hopeful happens.
Yeah.
That those are the places where God is working, not in this punishment or you're going to suffer for a reason, but in bringing something beautiful and good even out of the hardest circumstances.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Last thing I want to ask you about. You went on a work trip, lo, these many years ago, with Paul Dominicella,
I
Kate
did.
Lindheim.
The infamous mission trip.
Yes, a mission trip. Pastor
the van,
Bill.
The van, the kids, Paul and Kate.
Yes.
Kate Lindheim, yeah. Yeah.
And what did you learn, picking up that thread from the beginning about questions and doubts, and
sure,
what did you learn about that on
well,
this trip?
Well, I want to first say, and thank you for singing Simple Gifts with me today, because that was a hymn, I think that was a favorite of Kate's. Mm. And one of the things I learned on that trip, and trust me, Kate was also consulting with Pastor Bill while we were on this trip,
yeah,
because we were on this trip with churches that had different, I don't know, just different doctrine and different theology. And it brought up a lot of questions for me. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned is, you know, I guess in my Catholic tradition, we were told, at least my interpretation was that I was taught what to believe. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't, you would be punished. So you better believe this, right? And I have no idea what the Catholic Church is doing now, but that's kind of what my takeaway was as a kid. And so going on this trip, it brought up a lot of questions for me, and one of the things I think I learned that was really formative for me is that I don't really know what I believe, and it's okay. It's okay to be in the unknown. It's okay to not know where this journey is going or what the right answers are or what does this all mean or, you know, I don't know. And it's okay to just be in that place. Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about that's often the way it might be for anybody who's living with a loved one who either is living with a physical illness or a mental health condition is sometimes we don't know. Often we don't know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just, it's okay to just, I mean, honestly, if I can also share one more thing about Kate, who taught me, Jana, it's not one day at a time, it's 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Janet,
for
sharing
your story.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, and thank you, everybody. It means so much to me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I hope that you heard some places where maybe you resonated with the story or that you're seeing God showing up in a different way than you might have before, because that's the whole point of this sermon series. And let the people say, amen. Friends, as we go out into our week, hopefully a cooler one, and out into the world, may you feel that gaze of Jesus on you, who sees you, who sees your humanity, no matter what you are living with or living through. And may you find ways that you can nurture yourself so that you can be there for others in ways that helps to hold that Christ light as we walk with one another on this journey. Go in peace.